Welcome to the Life and Times of Captain Barney Miller podcast. I'm your host, Mike White. I am joined by, of course, the one and only, the rookie, Chris Dashew.
Let me just readjust my hair piece real quick. Okay. This is not a visual medium. I forgot. If you could see me, I was readjusting my hair piece to make it look awful, more awful than possible.
It's just going downhill.
Yeah, every episode is just like it's like moving further forward on his head. Maury's wigs don't come off. They surely don't.
Also joining us from another precinct is the one and only Mr. Richard Haddam.
We're doing a play here, not Hamlet.
Isn't Hamlet a play?
That's the joke.
Okay, now I get it. On this episode, we're talking about four episodes of the original Barney Miller TV show from season seven. We are almost to the middle of season seven. We're talking about the episodes Resignation, which aired originally January 8th, 1981, Field Associate, which aired January 15th, 1981, Movie Part 1, which came out January 22nd, 81, and Movie Part 2, which came out just the following week, January 29th, 1981. We are in the middle of January 1981, fellas, and I am feeling it big time here. Not really. I don't know.
40.
There's a good reference to Mount St. Helens at one point, which surprised me. For some reason, I thought that happened in 85, but apparently it was 80. So,
yeah.
First up, episode Resignation. This is the one where Chano shoots a kid and wants to leave the...
We already did this once.
Yeah. You're going to be hearing that a few times, I think, in our discussion. Yes, Resignation. Dietrich shoots a kid and wants to resign. But when Dietrich resigns, he manages to insult all of his coworkers at the exact same time. So, way to go, Dietrich.
Well, not only that, but they sort of did the joke again where he got shot in the cheek, because wasn't Nick Yamana shot in the cheek?
Well, other cheek.
And he's like, oh my, and Barney's like, oh my God. And it's like, no, other cheek. So, we've been shot in the cheek twice now.
That's true.
I'm just pointing that out. It's not a complaint. I thoroughly enjoyed Resignation.
I had a lot of fun with this. I was thinking, so there's a character in here that is a part of the entire episode, Ira Russo, played by Mario Roccuzzo, who has one of the greatest looks. He looks like he was drawn by the Warner Brothers artist. He does not look like a human being. He looks like a cartoon character. And he has turned himself in after all of these years absconding from, where was it, Arizona, I think it was, with, what was it, $1,300 that he stole? $1,500.
I remember this because I just watched it 45 minutes ago. It was $1,500 from some nuns who ran a charity for Native American kids. And it was just before Christmas.
And he spent it all on hookers and drugs.
Yes. He does not look like a guy who is spending money on hookers and drugs.
No. He looks amazing. He looks like Phil Leeds. If Phil Leeds had a son, he would look like this guy. You know,
it should have been John Fiedler.
Oh boy, yeah, Fiedler was right up there too. But I'm just so impressed with his look, and that he's got like the little comb over in the wrong part of his head, so it makes his face look like it's really big. Like the facial area is huge, but he's got like a tiny face in the middle of it. He almost looks like a Dick Tracy character or something.
He has a very tall head.
Oh yeah. He's got like a, I don't know, 16. 18 head, something like that going on.
He's got it. It's interesting. He does look kind of like a human cartoon character. He's a great character actor. So there you go,
he's
right?
Fantastic. And I like that they keep pushing him aside because they can't really do anything for him, and they end up not being able to do anything at all. He wants to be arrested after all this time. I was thinking that at some point in the episode, he was going to be all the way in the back, like towards the bathroom, and everyone would leave the precinct and they would forget that he's even there, because he just seems like one of these very schlumpy type of guys.
Yeah, that's great. And it was heading in that direction. He moved from Wodrow's desk to Nick's old desk that Levitt's at, And then Levitt kicks him out, and now he's like sitting by the bathrooms.
Right. Eventually makes it back to Wojo, though. But Wojo's a little too busy in this episode to be dealing with that. There's a lot of stuff going on in this episode. I especially like the, and you already made a reference to this, Richard, the, I don't know if it's the B story, where you've got Steve Franken as the playwright and Peter Elbing. Yes, one of the juicy fruits and the undead. Yes.
God, so he looks nothing like himself, though, I guess. He looks nothing like what I expect him to look like. No mustache, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I think that that's his real voice. I think he is putting on that accent. I think he is from St. Louis.
I think he says he's from London, so...
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know which of the accents is the put on.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the British one might be the real one, but yeah. Yes, famously from Phantom of the Paradise, also known for things like The Man with Two Brains, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. This guy was everywhere in the late 70s, early 80s. He's so good, and I love him having to be inspired and putting him, this guy who does not respect the written word, putting him at Harris's desk. Stroke of genius.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot in these four that we're going to discuss. There were several sort of classic Barney Miller criminals and situations. And it was a great run for Harris. These four episodes, I mean, just Harris just goes up and up and up. But we'll get to those later. But yeah, so the writer attacks the actor on stage because he's mangling his script. And they get into a fight and then the producer comes down to bail them out, and he's just, you know, you guys, if you want to kill me, why not just stab me in the heart?
Right. It's so good.
When it starts like that, you know you're just going to love everything that comes out of this guy's mouth. And he's like, I'm sitting at home enjoying life, drinking a martini, got my health. My wife found out about Vicky and doesn't care. Everything's going. Then the phone ring. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. Alan Rich, and just he's fantastic, but he knows that scarf really makes the performance, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That scarf is doing the heavy lifting.
It definitely is. Yeah. And just to see, not Peter Ebling, but the other guy, Steve Franken, he's another one of these guys where you're just like, how many times have I seen this guy? Because he was again everywhere for so long, and again a great look. It also helps that he's slightly shorter than Elbing, but like so much shorter than everybody else in the precinct except for Levitt.
He's looking right up at everyone the entire episode, like,
yeah. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Maury Amsterdam at times.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think just the put uponness of him.
Yeah, he's well, I mean, and it's sort of like it never really resolves, you know. It's just, we're going to bring these characters on. They're all, you know, more or less at each other's throats as just a way of nature. It's almost like three animals, you know, mm-hmm. in the wild that are known to be natural enemies. And they all go in, they all go out. And I don't think anyone expects their relationship to have improved at all by the time it ends.
No, it lacks the classic Barney Miller agreement thing. Like, yeah, he's not even involved in their case.
It's not even important enough for Barney to get involved.
No.
He's got other things. He's got to worry about what's going on with Dietrich. Dietrich and Levitt go out on a call. This is sort of, we don't even see this. This sort of is the beginning of the episode. And then they hear over the phone that someone's been shot. Turns out it's the suspect. Turns out Dietrich is the one that shot him. It's a little later that we find out the guy's going to be okay. Everyone's like, Dietrich, are you okay? You know, this is, you know, a stressful situation. You want to take the rest of the day off? No, I'm fine. I just need to type something up. Well, he goes over and types something up. It's his resignation letter. He decides that philosophically he can no longer be a police officer because his personal code is such that he does not want to take another human life. So he, you know, kindly refrains from wanting to be a cop anymore. And first Wojo, then Barney, then Harris start to take offense at what he's implying about those who don't resign.
Well, mm-hmm. They only take offense once Wojo, like, because it's the, okay, so, because I was expecting we would get to this part of the episode at some point, and I think the three of us are philosophically similar in a lot of ways. I understand where this is coming from. I do think it's a little bit of a cheat, though, storytelling-wise, because Dietrich never says any of that. That's just the characters getting to that point on their own, and listening to one of the characters essentially convincing everyone else of that. But I mean, like, this is one of these, it could have been solved if the characters just communicated. And you know what I mean? But that's, again, that's
I don't think so, because Dietrich cops to it. He's like, well, maybe it's true.
But,
maybe
but that's not like
personal code that's different than yours.
So. Right. But like, but we already know that. Like, that's already clear. Like, that part's not surprising, I guess. It's not, I think they all have a different personal code. Like, but I think their personal codes are within the same area code, as it were, because they're all good cops. I mean, I would say the whole, because I would assume you watched the stuff with Dorsey. Yeah, you watched it. You subjected yourself to that willingly, by the way. Jesus Christ.
I subjected myself to everything you guys cover because I want to be a part of it, participating at home.
Listen, and after my own heart.
And I listened to the Otto Bruno episode. Let me tell you, that was a great episode. You guys were all, Chris, you especially, were at the absolute top of your intellectual game. That was riveting listening to you guys talk. And it was funny listening to Otto just like struggle to find the words to compliment you.
I know. I do remember Otto complimenting me a lot, which I think is like a high amount of praise, given that that man, you know, has written a book about the show. My point is, like, I don't know, like, this is the seventh season of the show. Conflict between the main characters is fine, but like, this is one of the conflicts that I can't help but feel like is just being fabricated and isn't real. We know that they all have personal codes that are different. It's not surprising. Well, like, why is the show being like, aren't you surprised by this? It's like, not really.
I've got two thoughts on this. One is, like, my complaint, just sort of, you know, macro, is, well, when you become a cop, don't you sort of assume you might be in the situation one day where you will have to draw your weapon, you may have to fire it, and the person on the other end might die? Like, this isn't a surprise.
So when you pull your gun out of your holster, my assumption is, like, there's an intention there that may not necessarily be an outcome everybody agrees with, which is someone has to die, but someone may die.
Right.
Like,
So it was a little like, well, okay, but I will buy that having been placed in the literal situation for the first time, it hits different. So, and he decides, you know what? I didn't know I was going to feel this way. I want to quit. But here's what I like about the story. And I'll concede to you, Chris, that it might be, the conflict might not be as legit as you want. But what I liked about it was how they call him out.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, hey, mister, is what makes this kinds so of fresh. Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. But that saves it. That in a lot of ways saves it, because I would say, like, the fact that they've done this before, if they hadn't done that, right? Like, right. If they hadn't done that, because they have done, we did mention, like you said, Mike, they have done this before, more or less without the last little part, they have done this before. And the way they played it the first time was a lot more emotional anyways.
Well, what's interesting is we have a couple episodes, and we'll get to it next, but we have a couple of episodes where a sort of long-standing unspoken situation suddenly becomes spoken.
Thankfully.
And this one was really cool, because it's like, you know, you walk around and you're, you know, the smart guy who knows everything, but actually looking back on it, you've quit a lot of stuff. You were in medical school, you know, law school. You know, he even jokes about being a lumberjack and a beekeeper. And it's like, you know, maybe you're just, that's just a smokescreen because you're an indecisive guy and you don't know, you know, you've got a moral code with no place to go. Mm-hmm. So why don't you just stay here? And they kind of call him on his bullshit, and they never do that with Dietrich. And I fucking loved it.
Yeah. To see this pattern, for them to recognize the pattern and then make him recognize that he has a pattern to be like, hey, just because the going is tough doesn't mean you should quit, because you quit every single time you think that things are getting out of hand.
I wish they had brought that up more. throughout the show, because this is like maybe what, the second time they've brought it up ever? Like, because I think they brought up the fact that he was a doctor like one time in the past. Like, they were like, he went to medical school. I don't know. Like, yeah. I think, again, like, where they ended up going with it is fine. Because, again, like, Dietrich being like the character who normally gets the last word, now having no way to deal with what he's dealing with, is an interesting direction to go. I don't know. Season, can we just talk about how fucking weird season 7 feels? Because it does feel super strange. Like, not in a good way. Like, I'm understanding more and more why Otto feels the way that he does about this season. Because we kind of haven't mentioned it. This episode's not really funny.
No, which I'm okay with. But added to what we're talking about, I wish they had gone farther with this. I wish,
like, absurd.
We had seen, well, I kind of wish that we had seen any sort of Arthur's inner thinking.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
And just like, hey, tell us more of what's really going on, because he shuts down so quickly. He defends himself a little bit, but, you know, he's just not that person. He doesn't open up. He is, the enigma is what makes Dietrich appealing. But this seems like the one time that they could explore his character a little bit more.
Hill Street Blues, this is not. But that's it's trying to be that all of a sudden. Like, all of a sudden, I mean, the homicide episode, I mean, alone. I mean, Jesus, Richard, you were talking about the episode with Otto. Like, I was thinking about that while I was watching this. Like, this is the same show where a guy gets gunned down in the first episode of this season. Like, what the and this is kind of continuing this bizarre tone of just, I mean, again, it's bizarre because it's like Baby's First Hill Street Blues, like Baby's First Cop Show. They're trying to mix into a comedic show more dramatic beats. And I just don't think it works, because,
you know,
it's just not the right. This isn't the right time, though. I think the time is right for this kind of show. I don't think this is the right show, I think, is the problem.
I was going to say, again, having just also listened to your Otto Bruno episode, you know, this was the era of that. And you're talking about All in the Family. I mean, there was an episode where Edith Bunker is sexually assaulted and almost raped. And, you know, and that was a bit like Norman Lear was sort of the king of that, you know, the
on a very special episode.
Yeah. Abortion. You know, death, violent crime, racism, you know, a swastika being painted on the bunker's door, all kinds of like these sort of high profile, you know, in his comedies. So you're like, well, OK, but he was sort of the master of that and he did them. And I'm not going to say those were necessarily, you know, my favorite episodes, but they were usually handled in such a way that somehow they worked pretty well. And it didn't feel like, wait, why, what the hell? And maybe because those shows were already so openly dealing with controversial subject matter every single week that when they went another half step, it didn't feel like it was so far out of range. Whereas with this show, like you said, you know, they did the Harris incident. You know, they did a handful of episodes.
They
but
did
it's a
an episode called Rape. I mean,
yeah. And typically it was there weren't long stretches of just very serious, you know, opinions going back and forth. Even in those, you know, like The Slave that Otto Bruno mentioned, even in that episode, somehow they covered that subject matter. It was funny all the way through, even as it was black humor. It was very, you know, sort of.
Why's it got to be black?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't mean like the
West Coast elite.
Guys, don't be like that. Okay. You know what I meant.
Thank you, Mike, for that.
It's not what I mean. You know what I
understand. Yes. Yes. We both understand. Yes.
We get it. We're white, and we're all three of us are white. We get it.
Well,
how dare you.
One of us is Lebanese. So,
yeah.
Hey, me too.
I had a real, not issues, but I was questioning some of Noam Pitlick's choices in this episode. Like, so much of the producer of the play, he is outside of the cage talking with the writer and the actor, and the way it's framed, it is really very much like the whole screen is split in half, and on one side you have the producer, on the other side you have kind of the writer. Sometimes he actually dips out of the frame and then comes back in, and you don't get the the actor at all. And I'm just like, this is a choice. Like, why wasn't the camera moved over a few feet? So you had producer on one side still, but a little bit further over, and then writer, author, the author, actor inside of the cage reacting to him. And then same thing when they're talking with Dietrich, you get a long shot of Harris on the right side of the screen and Wojo on the left side of the screen. Wojo will occasionally chime in. It's really Harris's moment. And when Wojo isn't talking, poor Max Gale just has to stand there and stare at Dietrich the whole time. And you're just like, okay, this feels very uncomfortable. Why didn't Harris get a close up or frame him and Arthur at the same time? Why are you doing this to Max Gale? It just looks like he's kind of hanging in the wind. I don't know if you guys picked up on that, but that was something where I was just like, these are some odd choices that you're doing. And we're going to see that throughout the rest of these episodes. There are a few times where, you know, Chris, I'm so excited this season that we have a window in the precinct. And they're really pushing on that to the point where they're lighting people oddly because you've got natural light, quote unquote, coming through that window. And then you've got the fluorescence of inside. I'm just like, what are you guys doing? Why are you doing this?
Some of it looks, there's a moment where the producer is talking to him in the cage and it keeps going from them as the focus or he's the focus. And when he's the focus, it's fluorescent. And when they're the focus, it's like warm lighting and they keep going back and forth. And it's like, I'm going to have a fucking stroke. Like, yes. I'm going to literally seize up and out because the difference is so obvious that it's like one looks like it's a commercial and the other looks like a Hal Ashby movie and it's going back and forth and it's really disorienting. And again, yeah, it's because for whatever reason, it's like there's a window here and it's like, God damn it.
Where's this window you guys are talking about?
So we are where the window is for the most part as the audience. And we find this out because a couple episodes ago, the guy blows those buildings up and they literally are pointing at us, the camera, the audience, as if they can see something where we are and they're seeing buildings being blown up, which means there's windows. And
yeah,
so
it is to Harris's right, basically.
Yeah. The wall. Or whatever whatever two other fucking walls of the room, right? I'm assuming there's probably some windows on each side. But yeah,
well, there's a whole other group of people. There's six more detectives. Yeah. All those other names you see, they're just in a far part of the room. They just don't really talk to them that much.
the missing, Mike. It's like the fifth roommate on The Young Ones.
It's Officer Mike, isn't it?
Oh yeah, Mike hangs out there. That's
Wentworth is there. Jono.
Yeah. Well, that's where what's his name now? Is Dorsey over there?
Yeah, Dorsey's there. Yeah.
Where did Dorsey go?
He's over there.
Yeah. Well, that lady who came in for a few episodes who spoke with the Spanish accent and then left, like she's over there.
She's over there.
But none of the question, like, where did Dorsey go? Like, he's still there. He's just not part of the show anymore, right?
Nobody as far as I know, they're not going to bring up Dorsey ever again. And we'll talk about that in our next episode because I thought it was going to be a Dorsey nod, but nope.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, so let's just, as our bridge into the next episode, let's just be very clear. The only person who was happy that Dietrich was leaving was Levitt.
Yes.
Because that would have opened up a spot.
Which makes sense with his character.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, no.
Well, this is long storytelling paying off. Like this episode is the culmination of like seasons worth of storytelling, I would say. Yeah. And not like making it a specific story really at any point, but like every episode that he's in has one of these moments where he bitches about the fact that he's being mistreated and nobody ever gives me any respect. It's like Rodney Dangerfield. Like there's that. But there's also this other thing of like he voices his feelings of mistreatment constantly, but like it's always very underhanded. And this is the first time where he's like, fuck all of y'all.
Okay.
But it's like seasons. So, this is like three seasons worth of storytelling.
Yeah. So we're talking about the next episode, which is Field Associate. And toward the beginning of the episode, someone has made some sort of internal report. No one's clear on who did it or how. but there seemed to be a list of transgressions among the various detectives. You know, Wojo coming in late, Dietrich sort of not approaching the job with enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And a lot of unnecessary monologuing.
Yeah.
Harris is making personal phone calls. Barney's not enforcing the rules. It's like, who's doing this? And they do narratively.
Barney's worst things are he's not writing up people for being late.
Right.
That's it. That's all Barney has done. By the way, by the way, is the most bullshit of bullshit. But okay.
Well, okay, but which gets addressed.
Right.
But they do something narratively that I think is really cool. Again, early on in the first act, Wojo just walks right into Barney's office and says, I think it's Levitt. And Barney's like, you can't just accuse someone. Now, what's cool about that is that I think the audience was thinking that too. And then the minute he says it, the audience goes, well, it can't be Levitt now, because now it's never the first suspect. So now there's going to be yet another surprise. Well, there is another surprise, but not in that way.
Well,
so
it's funny, because this again goes back to another older episode where I'm trying to remember, Chris, what was it? There was something and they're just, oh, it was the graffiti on the wall. And the first thing they're like, maybe it's Levitt.
Levitt.
And so like kind of to your point, Richard, I was just like, well, there's no way it can be Levitt because they were lobbying all these accusations at him a few episodes ago. Well, it's probably like two seasons, but I'm just like, it can't be him. That's why I thought it was fucking Dorsey.
We bring Dorsey back just long enough to, you know, absolutely destroy his reputation and bury him forever.
I mean, they did a pretty good job as it was with him without having to do this episode specifically. Mm-hmm. How do we make him the most unlikable character that this show has ever had? Oh, I'll just have him accuse all of our characters of being dirty cops. Great.
You know, okay, so they hide the ball on Levitt also by giving him another storyline. And his storyline is it's his turn to put on a dress and go be bait in Central Park for muggers. So we think that's his storyline, and it is, but we think that's the end of it. And it goes in a different direction. We'll talk about the end, but what else is going on in this episode?
Well, I just want to mention before we go any further, Mike, we get an answer to the question of, are we going to see Levitt doing this? Which is yes. I know we asked that very long ago for the listener who has been listening along this whole time. We did ask at one point, like, are we going to see Levitt in a dress? And hey, to the show's credit.
Voila.
Yeah. Levitt looks good in a dress, by the way. Just gonna
he sounds. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. He looks the best out of any of them.
Yeah. His legs are good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were so interested, Chris. I didn't know this was like, you know, something you needed to see.
Well,
it's got,
Chris hasn't mentioned that he wants some Levitt cosplay when he goes out to visit you in a few weeks here. So
we're going to, we're going to write our Levitt Barney slash fic while I'm there.
When you come out to visit me, Chris, if you're going to do Levitt cosplay, you're going to be in uniform.
Oh, no, no. You're going to do the Levitt cosplay, Richard.
Oh, right, because I'm shorter. This is going to walk in, and I'm going to be like Levitt.
Blue dress, a lot of rouge.
Yeah, because Richard always curls. Says that he's like 5'2 or 5'3. Like, Richard's a hobbit.
Richard is not that short. I did not tower over him. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw eye to eye, Richard. I'm
a lot of things. I'm assuming
6 foot. Yeah,
are you 6 foot?
Oh no, no. Oh, I was wearing my special shoes.
Oh, your Spanish heels. Okay, like Sly Stallone.
Right. Okay. Didn't you notice how I was walking like Pee Wee Herman on the bar of a biker
of the sub shop? Yeah.
So that was the thing I wanted to mention. Speaking of the 80s and this show feeling weird, and you guys have mentioned as is a kind of a side tangent, but I think it kind of speaks to the weird tone of this show this season. Whenever I think of the 80s and doing a very special episode on or being serious all of a sudden, I think of, hey, we're the Turtles and don't do drugs and shit like that, because they stopped doing those episodes after a while. And for certain things, they were never going to have like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle episode where April O'Neil gets sexually assaulted by a member of the Foot Clan. It's not going to play for kids, but they can have the characters like talking to kids about it, like that, you know, the infamous Pee Wee Herman crack cocaine thing, which if you don't know what I'm talking about, go Google Pee Wee Herman. It's Pee Wee talking about the ins and outs of why crack cocaine is bad, but doing it dressed up like Pee Wee Herman, but just Paul Reubens' voice.
Right.
So like, this is crack, rock, cocaine. It's like, it's bizarre, but he's dressed up like Pee-wee. But the thing is, like, this whole season of the show feels like every episode is kind of trying to do on a very special episode of, like, I don't know why. It's all of a sudden the show has gotten kind of serious. And this episode with where Levitt ends up going with his character, like, all of a sudden it's serious. Like, and I'm not saying it's, this is more earned than anything else, other than maybe the thing with Harris in the next two episodes, but more so than the last episode's nonsense. Like, this is an earned, serious thing that I think works. Yeah. I just think this whole season, like, again, I don't think Otto biased me or anything, but like, I think this season has been kind of a drag so far. Like, well, in a way that the other seasons weren't. We've had bad episodes before. This season has just felt tonally strange.
You know, they've got, you know, every episode has two or three storylines. And I think what is happening is sometimes the A story is like, oh, this is kind of the like real thing that's happening to the detectives or one of the detectives. And then the other two storylines are just the, you know, okay, these are just the goofy people who are coming in and populating the office while an office drama goes on. The longer a show goes on, any show, half-hour shows, but also some half-hour shows, they have nowhere to go but soap, because you mm-hmm. become so involved in the characters and you've been with them for so long that after a while, it's just like, well, there's no new clever way to do a joke about the conflict between these two people. So maybe we actually now have to kind of roll up our sleeves and go, okay, what is the problem with you guys?
Right,
you
know? Right.
And then and so they finally do it here with Levitt, where he is accused, and he's like, yeah, actually it is me, you know? And they're like, why? And he says, and here's to your earlier complaint, Chris, he says, well, if it wasn't me, it would have been somebody else. So I figured I would do it and I'd make just, you know, picayune complaints. And,
which is hilarious that he uses the word picayune.
Yeah.
Because that came up in an episode a few seasons ago. Yeah.
And I do it. And then, but then they go a step further and then he digs in a little and says, look, you guys don't consider me an equal. And I've always treated you with respect. And he kind of one by one, including Barney,
yes,
kind of says, here's what you do. Here's what you do. Here's what you do. And you know what? And
you're cool.
Yeah. Right.
He was going there. I figured I'd just finish it for him.
He totally was. Yeah. And yeah, I love when he's just like, I haven't even started with you, with Barney. Just like tells him to back off, basically. Like, you'll get your turn.
But I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I found it kind of exhilarating. Like, whoa, we're saying it.
It yeah. just paid. It paid off. It's seasons worth of storytelling paying off in a well-earned moment. And that's because Ron Carey is good as an actor. And Levitt is a character that if he didn't stand up for himself at some point, I'd be like, yo, this guy's just a fucking clown, like a total pushover. Because I wouldn't say that the amount of abuse he takes this episode is any different than the amount of abuse that he normally takes. But it is a pretty serious allegation to have that leveled against him. And if you're him as a character, once they go as far as to level that against him, I think he realizes that, like, well, these guys are fucking assholes. Like, and if I don't say something here, then like, who's the big clown, me or them? And like, you're right, Richard, that moment is so well earned, because it's a real like, do it or don't, like, you've got one chance. And he takes it back and he really, I mean, roasts all of them. I mean, yeah. The thing with Barney is just, ugh. I mean, that's yeah. the thing. Like, as much as I love Barney as a character, like, whenever someone confronts him about his bullshit is a really good moment. Like, when Harris calls him out, he's like, you know, the moment they're not friends anymore, essentially. And their relationship has not come back since that episode. But I love when people confront Barney, because Barney is a little quaint. And Barney is a little, I'm not out of touch, but not necessarily keeping up with everybody else. But that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I so brilliant to have it happen when he's wearing the dress.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because it could be undercutting him, but if anything, it's almost like it's liberating him.
Totally. And it makes him in a way untouchable. If he was yeah. doing it in uniform, if he was doing it in a suit, it would be insubordinate. So, you know, in a way that we, even an audience, I think, would feel like, you can't get away with that. Like, you can't start yelling at your boss. But the fact that he's doing it in a dress sort of just kicks the legs out from under that. And everyone, like, no one can really say anything. And he says, yeah, come on, Wojo, you want to take a poke at me? Go ahead. You know, punch me if you want. And Wojo's like, well, I can't punch a chick.
Right.
So it gives him this weird dramatic license to say things that in his actual persona, he would never say, couldn't say. And now he says it. He says it fairly. The argument is totally legit. And at the end, he apologizes, but sticks to his guns and says, I respect you guys. I'm only angry because I want so badly to be a part of you. Mm-hmm. And that's my statement. And then he leaves. And it's like, damn, mic drop. Well done, Levitt.
Levitt is a... Go ahead, Mike.
No, please.
Okay, this might be a stretch, but... And I'm just going to use what happens at the end of the next episode. Has Levitt ever talked about having a significant other?
No.
Boy, wouldn't that be something. I mean, another gay character on this show. He does say at the end of the next episode. He does say it.
What does he say? Oh.
He literally says it. He goes, I'm gay.
He says it was worth a try. Oh, he's right. Not gay. Come on. Mm. If they were going to make him gay, they would have done it. That is the tightest thing.
Would they have? I mean, I don't know if they would have, because the way they we'll get to it when we get to it. I'm joking, but again, like in different times you could interpret it. And I mean, again, given the way the situation in this episode resolves itself, I don't know.
None of these guys. I mean, they've dated and stuff, but none of these guys have. I mean,
we've seen a lot of them make overt sexuality like part of their characters, like Harris making passes at women, Dietrich making passes at women,
nuns, right. Yeah,
Wojo. Nuns, Wojo making pass,
Wojo's
we,
girl.
We, yeah, Jesus oh, Christ. Boy. But we've never seen
that's
Levitt.
That's a sore subject now, isn't it?
Yeah, hello. I will be talking about that. But we've never seen Levitt make a pass at anybody. We've even seen Barney had people make passes at him. I'm not saying that's the case, but like, how much angrier can I make the fan base of this show?
Yeah.
Great.
I don't think they're angry. I don't think they're angry at all. Like, I think that, frankly, like, this show has aged way better than Kolchak has in a lot of ways. Time to make Richard mad. Well, like, it has in a lot of ways. Like,
Kolchak had 3 degrees of the compass within which it did everything it was going to do, and it never went beyond that. Now, if Kolchak had gone a second season, a third season, that would have widened out a little bit,
right.
I think. Who God only knows where it would have gone. But this show, again, 7th season, and I think Otto made a good point about shows going, you know, half-hour shows going beyond 5 seasons, something does change. And unless it's a show like Friends or Seinfeld, where you just become so part of the group that you almost don't care. You know, it's like, okay, the show's quality isn't as good, but I just like hanging out with these people. I think Barney Miller is like that. I think you forgive it a little bit. It's like, okay, maybe these aren't as good as the best episodes in season 3 or 4 or 5, but I like these people, you know, and I'm happy to spend a half an hour with them.
I think it could have been done better. I think the issue is I'm not going to say people who are writing for this show are better at writing comedy than they are drama, but I think the people who write the best for this show are better at writing comedy than they are drama. And I'm not saying this couldn't have worked, because this could have. Imagine Barney Miller Barney Miller going from the 70s to the 80s, right? And like becoming a little bit tonally different just because the era of the 80s, even if it is 80, 81, which is not the 80s the way anybody wants to remember the 80s. Not the full swing, not the Reagan 80s. I get it.
Yeah. Decades never begin on January 1st of the new decade.
Right.
It's always a thing. It's always like, you know, the 80s weren't the 80s until like 83 or something.
Right.
You know, the 90, you know, the new century wasn't the new century until 9/11.
Boy, isn't that fun? I mean, but that's the case. And like, here is the same thing. I just wish that the show had maybe, if they were going to do this, I just wish they had maybe brought some people on who had some expertise. And here's the thing, like, this really wasn't a thing at the time. This is a more contemporary idea to kind
what
of
are you talking
mix,
about?
Mix the two, like make it a dramatic comedy show, like a drama.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Like, this is, that's not like a thing that they were doing in 1980, like not the way that that's like a thing now, where so many shows are just not necessarily genre specific anymore, but are just kind of their own thing. like a This Is Us or something like that, where it's like, maybe it's just kind of all of these things all at once. I think that could have worked. I just think that's pretty,
well,
that's pretty bold to be doing in 1980 with the show that for the most part up until this point has been, for the most part, a comedic show, to the point where during the rape episode, there still was a laugh track.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and again, like MASH is the classic sort of serious, funny show, but comedies now don't do it. You know, the big ones, you know, The Office, Parks and Recreation, 30 Rock, you know, Community, New Girl, any of those shows, and you can name a million others, they don't do special episodes. They're just comedies. And it's so funny, but they don't even touch that stuff. It's like, no, we're just doing our comedy thing and that's it. And the big issues are, I guess, covered in hour-long dramas.
Richard, you asked what else was going on this episode, and there's two really good stories, but one of them is some of the best stuff that I've seen, and that is Ned Glass coming back. He was an exterminator in the, I think it was the Rats episode, and coming back here as Stanley Golden, an old-time criminal who has been a criminal since he was a teenager, and he was born in, what, 1909 or something like that?
Yeah.
And the relationship he strikes up with Harris is fantastic. And I love how everyone, except for Harris, is thinking, how is Harris going to parlay this into a book or a movie or some sort of thing? And Harris is actually being completely altruistic and just fascinated by this guy and really wants to help him out, and even goes to the point of finding a missing persons report on him and then getting our old friend Florence Halep to come back as the old wife who reported him missing in, like, was it 1945 or something crazy like that? And their reunion is just so nothing.
Yeah. It's total anticlimax.
Wonderful anticlimax there. So you've got that whole story going on. And then you mentioned before Jeffrey Tambor coming in here as William Klein, not the photographer, but William Klein, who, and this is one of those things, we've talked about this many times before, the whole paranoid with proof. I don't know if he has proof, but I've been looking at the Trilateral Commission, and boy, oh boy, does it seem like it might have been kind of an interesting think tank, especially to look at the members that are in there that he's talking about. I was not able to find George Bush as a member, but yeah, Jimmy Carter was, Anthony Blinken was, tons of people were involved with this. And I know that there's been conspiracy theories about the Rockefellers, and not as much as the Rothschilds, but definitely about the Rockefellers for years. So it's kind of interesting.
Is it still a thing?
It is. It is still a thing.
Wow. 43 years later. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Began in 1973.
It's the classic. I mean, it's almost the textbook paranoid with proof.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right. He doesn't really have proof, but his extra paranoia makes up for it. And it's Jeffrey Tambor, so it's very funny. And it's just a nice dose of classic Barney in the episode. So you can go, oh. And the Ned Glass thing is great. It's poignant from the very beginning, because we no sooner meet him than he tells us that he's dying.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, okay, so that's where we are. All right. And then slowly, you know, again, Harris kind of realizes this guy has nobody, which of course leads him to look up the wife. But by the end, they're kind of friends.
Yeah. To the point where he's asking Harris to write the eulogy at his prepaid funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't often see Harris just be totally... Yeah, and just sort of like benevolent to someone that never, like, there's never a drip of vinegar that comes in at the end. You know, he's just, I like you. You know what? You're a good guy. And that is how our story is going to end. You know, it doesn't end with him going, don't push it.
Right. Exactly. Which I thought he would. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be there for the funeral, you know, say something nice. I'll wear nice clothes, obviously. But yeah, that's a bridge too far. But no, they don't have that little stark twist at the end.
So in the next episode, it's for me one of the classic Harris runs, and especially in part one, because we're heading into movie part one and part two, And in part one, I there is nothing I love more than jokes about
movie production.
about movie production, but like taking something really seriously that isn't serious, and just every bit of his pretension and the degree to which he is just loving the opportunity to make a movie. And it's like, but Harris, it's just a skin flick. Oh, well, but you know, I think there could be some awards. I mean, that's clearly in his mind.
I love that it's coming on the heels of Field Associate, because when this episode starts up, it's Harris at his desk typing, and then Levitt comes over and reads what he's typing, and it's completely NSFW. And he just like goes over and hangs out next to Harris's desk. He's like, you know, oh, can I help you? He's like, no, I just want to see what happens to these breasts in this, you know, page that I'm reading. And then he looks at him with, they can do that?
Yeah.
Harris is a freak. Okay.
Harris is a freak.
Man. Harris just loves all of his freaks out there in freak land. Okay. Yeah. Like, he's a freak, y'all.
He's the Radley Metzger of the old one too, man. I would love to see the movie that he actually puts together.
I want to read this erotica. Like, give me a little taste of that. Come on now.
Barney playing the perfect producer too, where she's like, isn't this long? Shouldn't you have more of this? It's like all of his notes are, he's such the producer.
But Harris is so highbrow.
Oh, yeah.
And this endeavor is so lowbrow, but he's approaching it highbrow. It is perfect. It's the perfect Harris story. They get every joke, everything you could think of, they do, and he does it perfectly. I could not have been happier.
They got a whipping it out joke. They literally have him say he's whipping it out.
Right. They just slid that one past the censors.
Right up to their noses, even.
This is the strangest two-part episode we have ever seen on this show. Because really, it doesn't need to be two parts. And it's basically a continuation of the story, but it's not like we hinge on something. There's no, somebody's been shot. We got to go down.
I mean, how many more times can they do that? This ain't Supernatural. I mean,
but still, at the same time, like, we've done two-parters, you know, like Homicide.
Yeah, how many more times can people be shot? Is what I'm saying on a two-parter, like, even on another two-parter, one more person in the 12th precinct gets shot. Like,
well, there was the one where Barney went down and helped out the people that were protesting at their apartment.
That's true.
That was a two-parter. There's a good, in like the, oh, you know, there's the epidemic and we all need to sleep here and these kind of things. But there's no like to be continued type.
No.
Next time on the show and last time on the show. It just feels like two episodes that were thrown together and they happen to have the Harris movie to tie them together, but really could have just been the next episode. It should have been called Four Women is what the second episode should have been called.
I'm telling you, there's no way we'll ever know, but I almost feel like they had so many jokes to do and they knew at the beginning, it's like, okay. And then we're going to see them watching it. I mean, with this cast,
oh God,
having them looking at a screen and reacting is also gold. I mean, you know, that's going to be great.
And
so it's like, okay.
Second episode completely is just that. Like, it's literally just like a 12-minute reaction episode.
Yeah.
Which means that's half the episode. Like,
in the back of their minds, it's like, okay, and it's going to end with them watching it. And then they were sort of like, oh, well, but no, we've got literally 20 cards on the board about beats that can happen and things and reactions and jokes. And let's get Luger in there. And we get the blind
smartest
guy
fucking smartest that fucking thing in this episode thing. Is James Gregory. I mean, Ralph Monza is pretty good too.
Yes.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I like just like, Ralph like, Monza you know is like a mascot for this show at this point. He's been on this goddamn show so many times.
it's just like we'll do all the production jokes in the first half, and then we'll just. I mean, half the episode is a darkened squad room as they're all sitting around watching the film and reacting, and it's great. So yeah, I'm glad. Even though there was no cliffhanger, it was still, I was happy to wallow around in that story for another episode.
I mean, the only thing missing is Doris Roberts, because that would have made it just a little bit better, because she's like, Ralph Monza for me is like the guy who's been on the show a lot recently.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
You know, you're 100% correct. It would have been much funnier if there had been a woman in the room, and right. Doris Roberts would be the perfect one.
Well, yeah, she's been on the show like plenty. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead, with this first one, we've got a couple side stories going on. We've got I'm trying to remember if it's, yes, Dennis Howard is Jed Brinkman is the proper broadcaster, right? It's Arnie Freeman is Philip Helm, who's the radio broadcaster, or am I?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you've got the radio broadcaster who wore the blazer of the TV broadcaster, and he's just talking about the glory days. The radio guy's talking about the glory days of the radio. And then when TV came in, it just usurped him. And I do like, I was like, they had me on television. They said I was too acerbic. It's just like, yeah, I can see where they're at, you know. So that's a good thing.
It's a good C story, but the B story is as good as the A story. And the B story is Scanlon and Zatelli.
It's
so
the
good.
The last time we're ever going to get Zatelli on here.
And he's so good. He gets to actually be like a character. Like I wish we'd seen him more. I mean, is this really the last time he doesn't come back?
That's it.
That's correct.
He's so good. He's so good.
Man, yeah. I was really worried they weren't going to redeem this story given how fucking poorly they've done it up to this point. And I'm not just saying that as someone who, again, is gay. I have no problem with the way they've handled this character. What's funny is they almost made him gayer in this episode than he's ever been. There's a couple moments where I was like, he's being a little bit more fey than he was last time we saw him, which I was fine. Like, he can totally do it and it totally works. But I think this episode redeemed the Zatelli is gay storyline, because up until this point, it really felt like it'd been written by a room full of straight people. And it got
dropped. It was just like, we did it for one episode, and then we dropped it.
I mean, again, room full of straight people.
But when
you bring it back to be the butt of jokes is my point. And this episode, it is the butt of jokes, but I think it ends up not being the butt of jokes to the point where the point is lost completely. Though, again, to be fair, the way the episode ends almost does ruin it. It gets close. Very, very close. I know.
I know you're not talking about this, but I was so angry at Wojo in this episode. So angry.
Oh, right. Yeah, boy.
When he just like getting raked over the coals by Scanlon, who has this former complaint about a guy who was evading arrest, and he took a wallet that he stole and shoved it down his pants. And so Wojo's trying to get the wallet out, and he's just like, well, I'm not gay like Zatelli or something.
The greatest line in this entire fucking show, by the way. I'm so glad we got to the point where one of us other than me said it, because like that guy is...
I was just awful. Like, you gotta be kidding me.
Fucking Wojo, it's like, go die. Go die. Put two pieces of bread on the side of your head. What does that make an idiot fucking sandwich, pal? You outed.
Know, and then they it's horrible. I mean, it's a really, you know, frightening, upsetting moment. But then, and they sort of walk it halfway back with Zatelli going, you know what? Don't worry about it. I should have said something. It came out. It was going to come out. So today was the day, you know?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, and it's funny because that was also part of it. It's like Barney saying to Zatelli, so you never followed up. Like you said you were going to do something, but then you didn't. It's like, do the guys downtown know about you? And he's like, well, sure. No, I mean headquarters.
Right.
Great line.
Great one. Yeah.
Well, actually, I think the best line in this entire thing is when he goes, I'm finished, both in response to being done with the filing cabinet, but also in response. Like, and I loved that. But, you know,
that was nice.
To be fair, I think, you know, the idea of like, okay, so you have, I think, the worst character on the show's list of antagonists. I think Scanlon's near the top, if not the number one, because he's just such a repugnant dickhead. Mm-hmm. Perfectly.
So good, though.
Like, perfectly, right? Like, it's perfect. Yes. Like, he's such an asshole. Like,
but weirdly, he was like a little, like a little less like, you know, drooling. He was sort of like, I'm having a good time being a jerk, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think he kind of always does, though.
He sits down next to Zatelli, like really close.
He's
like,
yeah, why'd you come talk
to me? We could have worked something out, you know, but you didn't. So now you dog me. Yeah. But it was weird. That was a weird beat.
The best part for me, though, is after the fade out, fade in, and you've got Harris making his tea and Wojo kind of trying to talk with him, and Dietrich just butts between the two of them, and he starts pouring his coffee. And they're just not looking at Wojo whatsoever. He's just, well, anybody could say something stupid like that. Da, 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 da. And then, like, when they leave, you know, like, I think Harris says thank you or something like that. And then Dietrich does that goes double for me. And then they leave. And then Levitt's there going, I was the field associate and I'm disgusted.
Which is a great reference to a previous episode, which this show has been doing more of now recently.
Yes. Yeah.
Can I point out that I feel like this is maybe the first episode this entire season that feels like old school Barney Miller?
It does. It really
right?
does.
Yeah. The first time this season, really, the whole episode, start to finish, feels like a funny sitcom again, and they're making a porno, right. And like, okay, it's like when Homer went to space, you know what I mean? Like, who cares? It is a sitcom through and through, and I like that after 9 episodes this season, we're finally back to it. I appreciate that.
But think about it. Think about it. Something serious happened in this episode. Something really serious happened. Like, you know, Zatelli was outed by one of the guys, and they could have, so it could have been executed differently in a way that would not have been as funny or as satisfying or as on tone. But somehow this one, they did it. They're like, oh no, they you know, a serious thing happened, but it's funny all the way through. It resolves. We get it. Everyone's in character. And it's sort of it's sort of the B story, but sort of the A minus story underneath the movie. And that was really funny. So yeah, I agree. This one was sort of like, we're getting our mojo back. All right.
I also love that in the end, it turns out that yes, just like the last episode, there are homos in high places.
Oh, yes.
We're everywhere. I love that the episode redeems itself at the end where it's like, I got a promotion because, like, again, homos in high places. Like, again.
Well, yeah, it's sort of like, I'm getting promoted, you know, chief inspector, whoever the guy is, I'm going to be his top assistant. Apparently there's there's a lot of us around. Italians? Yeah, you know, that too.
That too, yeah.
One of the best lines in the episode. Like, yeah. Yeah. Paisans.
Really good lines that just, you know, hit the subject right on the head, but hit it with comedy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, when the show is operating at its best, which it, again, like, I'm not saying you can't be serious, but, like, this is the way you do both. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know, it had swung so far in the other direction. I mean, again, this is the season where a guy gets murdered in the first, shot in the head, too. I'd like to remind everybody, he just gets murdered. You know, that was a fun thing.
Dietrich didn't mean it. Come on.
I know. It was an accident.
So that's part one of movie. Part two is the part where they're watching the movie. The blind guy is there. The blind guy is the guy who is the target of a mugger who mugs handicapped people. And they bring that actor in who's really funny.
Oh, yeah. And he was like, it feels like he was just in
here. J.J. Barry, yes.
J.J. Barry doing his work, man.
That guy, his whole attitude is like, hey, it's tough out there. I got to go for the low-hanging fruit.
Because that was kind of his thing last time, right? Wasn't it talking about how difficult life as a criminal is?
I can't remember.
So he was in Fog.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I don't remember, but it's, I mean, like, his character seems so like we've already seen this. Like,
oh, yeah.
Hapless.
Yeah.
Oh, schlubby criminal.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make a living.
Yeah, I'm a fat guy. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Hey,
yeah.
When I'm not pounding ziti, I gotta rob people.
Pounding it down my gullet. I'm a big fat guy. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I mean, like, okay, central casting. This guy's perfect.
I do have to say that the C story in this one is probably one of the weaker C stories, the whole charity thing, and how there's the
Right.
Speaking of people we just saw.
Yeah. The poor blind guy's like, oh yeah, I'm out of everything and you are a charity. And the guy's like, yep, good luck.
What the fuck is that guy's problem?
Yeah. Oh man.
This Norman Bartold, who's been on the show 5 times. This is the fourth of 5 times, I believe.
The guy who plays the unctuous sort of suited head of the charity. Yeah, that guy.
The guy with the very high hairline. That's the only way I can put it. I don't know how to say, like, he's not bald. His hairline is just, like, back here. Yeah.
But he's just got that snooty patrician sort of.
When the last time he was on the show, he's doing the exact same thing, I'm pretty sure.
Well, that's the great thing about character actors, you know? It's like, well, go get the guy who does that thing that we need for this role. He's done it 50 times.
Right.
Do it a 51st time.
I love that, we get freaking James Gregory coming back. It is so nice to see Luger again. And I, you know, back in season 2, I would not have been saying that, but here we are now. It's so great. And plus he's making references to the last time he was on the show where he forced Barney to write that recommendation. Yeah. And then he's just like, I'm chained behind a lousy desk, cooped up in a little office like this. How can you do it, Barn?
Yeah. But I swear to God, they only brought him in. It's like, let's come up with a fucking pretext to bring him in. We just need him sitting in front of that screen when everyone's watching the movie. And then Levitt and Wojo are so upset because they have to go out on a call. Yeah. They come back an hour later. And I can't believe they didn't do the line where it's like, so what do we miss? Nothing. Dietrich is yawning and you can hear the dialogue. It's like, you know, the cacophony of my heart tripping, you know, and the, you know, I mean, just written beyond anything you've ever heard. It's almost as good as the porno in American Werewolf in London.
Oh boy, yeah.
Very overwritten.
It's like, what is going on here exactly? And they finally, but apparently when it finally gets dirty, Harris gets high marks. So I think you're right, Chris. I think he's a bit of a freak.
Yeah.
There's that thing, like the blind guy's, aren't they doing anything yet? And Luger's like, nah, they're just chewing the fat. And then Harris is like, no, that's later. And I'm like, what?
Hey, freaky shit, man.
Born to wear designer jeans, and you were born to make designs on them. Oh boy.
11 minutes 22 seconds into the episode, the episode's 25 minutes long, is when it starts with them watching the movie, and that goes to the end of the episode. So it's 14 minutes long essentially, which is crazy.
And it's so good. And the ending is so perfect. And you know, you can see it coming. And then when it happens, you're still so happy. But it's like, oh, they've decided they don't want to do this. They want the film destroyed. We've got to turn it in. And they're going to destroy it. And Harris is so perfect. He's like, but this is my baby.
Yeah.
You know?
It's my masterpiece. So
we'll have Wojo take it in. And Wojo's like, I don't want to kill his baby. And he's like, no, I'll do it. I'll see it through. I'll see it through to the end. I've taken it this far. I'll take it all the way through. And as he's walking out, Dietrich's like, oh, hey, Harris, make me a print too.
Right.
It's like, you got it.
It's, you know, and that's the funny thing. Like, it literally freeze frames on him going,
he's doing the
wink and the fucking finger gun with the wink, with the fucking rings and everything. It's like it's the best freeze frame the show has had so far, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
It's so satisfying. It's the perfect end to just such a nice little subplot. 2-episode subplot for Ron Harris, and it's the best.
Can we say this might be the best 2-parter that the show has done so far?
You know, for all my complaining, yes, this is the best 2-parter.
What complaining? The complaining of what, this season not being good?
No, the complaining of this isn't a 2-parter.
To
be continued is missing. But yes, this is the best 2-episode combo that we've had probably since that run, the run of 3 of Dorsey, obviously. Perfect television. But then this one, you know, it's pretty close.
Yeah. Dorsey the best.
Were they like auditioning the character of Dorsey?
Did they really think three episodes?
He was supposed to be on the show forever. Yeah. For not forever,
it's
but like
so weird.
I mean, weird. Yeah.
It's like, why are we bringing, it's like, I mean, maybe this is reductive of me, but it's like, why not? Why are you bringing another white guy on the show? Why not bring a woman? Why not bring a person of color? You've done it before.
Yeah. Yeah. Given that they've done it before. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even get how he was like, what was his character didn't even have that much of a hook other than kind of being a downer and an asshole.
Right. Well, and hitting on underage prostitutes.
And being a less fun version of Dietrich.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's nothing that made him be like, oh, he's the perfect missing flavor on this, you know, salad.
Exactly.
No, I don't know. I guess as I'm sitting here wondering about this, like you mentioned, Richard, like at the time, like who could they have brought on to the show to like bring anybody else in, like a woman, like what, like another female character, I guess, like because that would make sense at this point, right?
They could have, every third episode, they could have brought that janitor lady back. Mm-hmm. And I know the actress passed away, so technically they couldn't have, but they, you know what I mean? They could have, like, she could have come in while they're watching the movie and looked at it. And again, because would it be weird if a woman was in the room? But she could have just stood there going, oh, what's all this? What are you guys doing? You know, it's like, not bad, you know? And there could have been, I mean, Barney Miller of any show could do it. You could have brought in a female character actor, as you suggested, Doris Roberts, and a funny, funny scene would have gotten even funnier.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Barry, wouldn't that have been fun? You know?
Yeah.
I know. It's almost like there was a, God, that feels like a lifetime ago that we complained about Barbara Barry, like being billed on this show, but not being on this show like years ago at this point. But yeah, there's a version of this show out there that maybe isn't as funny as the show ended up being, but it looks more like a sitcom that you'd be expecting nowadays with like a guy who has a specific occupational job, but also has the home life. I mean, isn't that fucking Dennis Leary show, Rescue Me? Like he's a firefighter, but he also has a home life. Like, you know, I mean, that happened now. Like that's a thing people are into. This was just a little bit ahead of the curve.
If you are watching these with us, like Richard does, if you're watching these with us, and they are all available now on Tubi, and they look pretty good, do yourself a favor and go to 15 minutes and 6 seconds in the air. Sorry, 16 seconds. And take a look. Sorry, 6 seconds. Take a look at Arthur Dietrich when the 1812 Overture is playing. And Luger says, you know, I used to eat that cereal. Steve Landisberg is cracking up behind him, and he just has the biggest, dumbest grin on his face. It is just so nice to see that as they're doing, because here I am complaining, you know, a few episodes ago about Wojo having to kind of like keep that serious face on him as he's like, you know, as Harris is giving his exposition. And it's like, this is great to see the characters are having such a fun time. At least Landisberg's having a ball.
Yeah. Corpsing.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Like they were allowed to have fun within the reality of the episode. It's like, hey, cool. We're going to watch Harris's movie. It's movie day. Awesome.
Yeah, this is a fun episode.
I think this might be the best two-parter because, yeah, and it brings a lot of stuff together. And we had some very solid B and C stories, except for the one charity thing. Otherwise, pretty darn good.
But I love so many of the terms that they use in this episode, like Black Stallion, and just like, so, I don't know. I'm a huge fan of like characters sitting around and watching stuff. Like this reminds me so much of like Super Troopers and them watching Johnny Chimpo. And you have all the characters reacting. And like, again, like I love these kinds of things because, yeah, you can really have a fun time with your ensemble cast all at once. And hey, Ralph Manza, the guy who's fishing and runs away from Godzilla. I like bringing that up every time we see him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when we come back next month, we're going to be talking about three episodes. We're going to talk about The Psychic, Stormy Weather, and The Librarian. So excited to see what we have as we delve into February of 1981. I said, it was kind of nice getting a little George Bush reference in there when the Jeffrey Tambor referenced him. I was just like, oh yeah, he was the head of the CIA at this point. And I was like, oh wait, no, he's the vice president at this point. Okay.
Yeah.
Now it makes more sense why he would be so upset about that. And that Carter was part of that whole thing. So
I'm curious about the librarian. Otto Bruno kind of flagged it like, oh, you've got one coming up. It's a good one. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what. So I can't wait to see it.
I'm glad you're paying attention to this, Richard. That really makes me feel good.
Yeah. Well, I'm not just a guest on the show. I'm a fan.
Oh, and that's how we got to know you, Richard.
That's right.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. I married my stalker.
It's so weird. It's so weird to think about Richard still. You're being like, oh my God, I found this Kolchak podcast. Let me reach out to these Kolchak podcast guys and see what they're all about. It's like, whoa.
Hey guys, would you let me be on an episode once? Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this guy, Chris? I don't know. Have you seen Mothman Prophecies? Yeah, I did. Do you see Under Siege 2? Yeah, well, maybe. Let's have one against them. Yeah.
I don't even remember. Did we have that conversation? I don't remember what the conversation was when you told, because I know you. I think you told me.
Probably, because I think I monitor the Twitter.
Yeah, I don't remember what you told me. I think I was like, whatever. I think I was probably like, cool, let's do it. Like, I'm always game. I never say no, you know, for the most part, unless it's like something.
That's what I like about you.
Yeah.
Well, I always start all of my email correspondence with, hi, Richard Haddam here, writer of Mothman Prophecies. I love your podcast.
Then the next thing is an attachment of your penis.
That's how you make it.
Yeah. That's like my thumbnail, if you will.
Yeah. What would happen if that was your signature on your email instead of your picture? Just a picture of a, not even your own, just a pen. Well,
that'd be kind of good. Like, yeah, you got, you know, sincerely yours, Richard Haddam, a penis. And then, like, your contact information.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And there's, and like, nothing else is lascivious. It's just that.
Right.
Would anyone call you on it? Would they be like, what is wrong with your contact photo?
I think the answer is yes.
But if you're like, it's a family photo.
My father's penis.
Penis has been handed down to me. Yeah.
Yeah, please. Mr. Haddam is my father's penis.
Well, speaking of your penis, Richard,
yes.
What are you up to these days?
I am up to Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf, my new podcast, you guys.
Speaking
of, it's my new podcast. You can check it out wherever you get podcasts. I've got an enormous shelf of paranormal books. Every episode, I take one down. We talk about it. I have, yes, my enormous shelf.
Look at the size of that briefcase.
Yeah, and talk about the books, talk about my life, and have some fun. So check it out, Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf.
And how about you, Chris?
Well, you can find me and everything that I work on over at weirdingwaymedia.com, where this show can be found, along with other things that are edited and produced or worked on by me or you, Mike, or you, Richard, from time to time, like Rankin on Bond, which is a Patreon exclusive thing that you can find over at mine and Mike's respective Patreons, which is patreon.com/culturecast or patreon.com/pro booth. No, projection booth.
There you go.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And patreon.com. I was just trying to remember. And patreon.com/projection booth. And over at Weirding Way Media, you can also find Richard's wife's award-winning podcast, 80s TV Ladies.
80s TV Ladies.
What about you, Mike White?
Well, you know, the projection booth has never won any awards. It's made a couple lists, usually, like podcast hosts. Never mind.
I was going to make a joke like best podcast to listen to while you're on death row.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Podcast to listen to while you're awaiting trial in Guantanamo Bay.
If you have only one podcast to listen to on your last day on earth, make it the projection booth.
Yeah, what would be like the strangest compliment? Yeah, like my the equivalent of my final meal, like the last podcast I listened to before I murder,
right?
By firing squad. I want it to be the projection booth podcast.
Dear Mike White,
I just wanted
to let you know by the end of this week, I will be dead.
When the SWAT team took out the shooter and we claimed his body, his phone was playing an episode of the projection booth.
God, can you imagine what that would be like?
Could be so lucky to get that much free publicity.
Now, Mr. White, Mr. White, you say that you make a podcast. Would you like to tell the jury what a podcast is? You're about to go on trial.
Internet radio, kind of, that you can listen to whenever. Yeah.
Why would this man was clearly holding such rage against Jewish people?
Oh, man.
He's listening to your podcast before he opened fire.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that whole secret cache of anti-Semitic episodes that I do. Gentleman's agreement where I'm just like, fuck. Agree pack. Fuck that guy.
And as his body hit the ground, we saw that his iPod shuffle was tuned to your episode on UHF. How do you feel about that, Mr. White?
You did not know your episode would inflame a person of this sort into action?
It's all a lie. There's never been a case like this before. It's very unusual.
I claim podcaster internet radio immunity.
Witch hunt.
Oh my god. And scene.
So thanks to John Walker for providing us with our theme song. Thanks to everybody for listening. Please go on over to wherever you downloaded this podcast, rate, review it, tell your friends, tell your family. Just have a great time with it. And we'll see you next month.